All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to be looking at something pretty foundational, I think, to how our legal system works, to the idea of fairness in the courts, right?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. This is really about getting to the core of, what does it mean to have a fair trial, to have impartial justice?
And to do that, we're going to be diving into a Supreme Court case. It's Ward v. Village of Monroeville. It's from 1972, so we're talking over 50 years ago.
Right.
But the thing is, the implications of what the court decided in Ward are still relevant today, for sure.
And just to kind of, give everyone a little taste of what we're getting into, the case really centers around this question. If you have a situation where the mayor of a village is also the judge in the village court, and a big chunk of the village's budget, its funding, comes from fines that are collected in that court, can that mayor really be impartial? Is that a fair system?
Yeah, that's a great way to frame it. And spoiler alert, the Supreme Court ultimately said no.
That kind of setup is not okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that's the answer. But the why, the reasoning, the way they got to that no, that's what makes this case so interesting and so important, I think, for understanding how we think about judicial impartiality, even today.
I totally agree.
Okay, so to really unpack this, we'll start by sort of setting the scene, like what was going on in this village, Monroeville, Ohio.
Right.
And then we'll really get into the central legal question that the Supreme Court was grappling with. And to do that, we'll actually look back at another case, Toomey v. Ohio.
Ah, yeah, a classic.
Yeah, Toomey, it's kind of like a foundational case that the court in Ward kind of had to build on. And then we'll get into the majority opinion of the court in Ward, what their main reasoning was.
Okay.
And then we'll actually look at the dissenting opinion because one of the justices disagreed with the majority, which I think always makes things more interesting.
Definitely adds another layer.
Yeah, for sure. And then to wrap things up, we'll really talk about why this case from, way back when is still so relevant today. And I think there's some pretty clear connections to, issues that are being debated right now, even.
Absolutely.
Okay, so to start us off, can you kind of paint a picture for us of what was happening in Monroeville, Ohio? Who was Clarence Ward and why was he in court in the first place?
Yeah, so picture this, right? Small town Monroeville, Ohio.
Okay.
Clarence Ward is driving along, and he ends up getting stopped, and then he gets convicted of a couple of traffic offenses. Pretty standard stuff, right?
Yeah.
But here's where things get a little bit unique. The person who's acting as the judge in his case, the one who finds him guilty and decides on the fines, is the mayor of the village.
The mayor.
The mayor. And we're not just talking about some, ceremonial mayor. This mayor had some real power, especially when it came to the village's budget, managing the money.
Okay, so the mayor's also the judge. That's already kind of interesting.
It is.
But then how does the money, like the village's budget, how does that all tie into this?
Right, so that's the crucial piece here. A huge portion of Monroeville's revenue was coming directly from the fines, the forfeitures, the fees that were collected by, you guessed it, the mayor's court. We're talking a significant chunk of their budget, like somewhere between 37% and 51% just in the mid-1960s.
Wow, 37% to 51%.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So you can kind of see the potential problem here. The same person who's responsible for keeping the village's finances healthy is also the one who's deciding on these fines and penalties.
Yeah, you can definitely see how that could create a conflict of interest, like even for a well-intentioned mayor, right?
Exactly. And that's precisely the argument that Clarence Ward made. He basically said, "Hey, this isn't fair. How can the mayor possibly be impartial when his job, his duty, is to bring in money for the village, and a big part of that money comes from convictions in his own courtroom?"
Right. Yeah, it's a pretty compelling argument, I think.
Yeah.
So what did the Ohio courts say about that? Like, did they agree with Ward?
No, they didn't. They actually upheld his conviction, which is what ultimately brought the case to the Supreme Court.
Okay, so the Supreme Court decided this was important enough to weigh in on.
Right. They clearly saw that there was a pretty big constitutional issue at stake here.
Yeah, and I think going back to what you were saying about, the mayor's role and the village's finances, seems like that's really the key piece here, right?
Yeah.
This idea that the mayor's court was, in a way, a major source of funding for the village.
Definitely. So with that in mind, with that financial backdrop, the question for the Supreme Court became, okay, what's the legal issue here? What exactly are we deciding?
Right.
And the core legal issue was whether this whole situation, the mayor being the judge and the village relying on the court's revenue, whether that violated the due process clause of the 14th Amendment.
Okay, so just as a reminder for everyone listening, the 14th Amendment, that's a big one, right? That's the one that guarantees, among other things, that everyone gets fair legal proceedings.
Exactly, that everyone has the right to due process of law.
Due process.
So that's what the Supreme Court had to figure out, whether Clarence Ward was denied due process because of this whole setup in Monroeville.
Okay, so that's the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
But you also mentioned earlier that there was this other case, Toomey v. Ohio.
Yeah.
That was really important for understanding Ward.
Absolutely.
So why was Toomey so important? What did that case say?
Okay, so Toomey, it's from 1927, and it really set a pretty clear standard. Basically, Toomey said that a judge can't have a direct personal pecuniary interest in how a case turns out. Like, if a judge would personally profit financially from convicting someone, well, that's a straight-up violation of due process.
Right, because, I mean, that would just create such a huge incentive for the judge to be biased, right?
Exactly. You know, the court in Toomey even used this great phrase. They talked about the possible temptation to forget the burden of proof when a judge stands to gain personally from a conviction.
Right, because suddenly the judge isn't just thinking about, you know, is this person guilty or innocent?
Right.
They're thinking about, well, if I find him guilty, then, you know, I get this money or, you know, whatever the benefit is.
Yeah.
So, okay, so in Toomey, it was about this direct personal benefit to the judge. But in Ward, the mayor wasn't pocketing the fines, right?
Right.
It was going to the village. So the question becomes, does this indirect financial interest, you know, the mayor's responsibility for the village's budget, does that also raise the same kind of red flags?
Yeah, that's the big difference between the two cases, right? That's the nuance that the court in Ward had to grapple with.
And what did they ultimately decide?
They decided that even an indirect financial interest like this, where the mayor's job is to keep the village running smoothly, and part of that means making sure they have enough money, well, even that creates a possible temptation that could undermine impartiality.
Possible temptation.
Yeah.
So they're not saying that the mayor is definitely biased, but that there's this potential for bias because of how the system is set up.
Exactly. It's about the structure of the system itself creating this inherent conflict of interest. And Justice Brennan, who wrote the majority opinion, he was really emphatic about this point. He said that the mayor's executive duty to the village, you know, his responsibility to keep things running, it's so tied to the money that his court brings in that it just creates this pressure, this potential for him to be less than impartial.
You know, it's interesting when you put it that way, because I think it's easy to think about this in terms of, like, is the mayor a good person or a bad person? You know, is he intentionally trying to be biased? But what you're saying, and what the court is saying, is that it's not even about that. It's about the system itself creating this situation where even a well-intentioned person could be influenced, you know, even subconsciously.
Exactly. And that's why the court was so concerned about the appearance of bias, not just actual bias. They wanted to make sure that the system was set up in a way that would prevent even the possibility of this kind of undue influence.
Okay, so the majority of the court is saying that this arrangement in Monroeville, it's not constitutional.
Yeah.
But I know that one of the justices disagreed.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Justice White dissented.
Okay, so what was his argument?
Well, his main point was that the mayor wasn't directly benefiting financially. You know, the money wasn't going into his own pocket.
Right.
So he thought that the precedent from Toomey shouldn't apply here. He said extending it to this kind of indirect interest was just going too far.
So he's drawing a pretty clear line between a judge personally getting richer from their decisions and a village, you know, as a whole, benefiting from the court's revenue.
Exactly. And he also argued that the court should look at these kinds of cases on a case-by-case basis, you know, instead of creating a broad rule that might, you know, throw out similar systems in other places. Mm-hmm. And he even asked this kind of provocative question in his dissent. He said, must we assume all mayors violate their oaths?
Must we assume all mayors violate their oaths? That's an interesting point.
Right. So he's basically implying that the majority is being a little too suspicious of elected officials, you know, assuming that they're all going to be corrupt just because of this potential conflict of interest.
But isn't there also something to be said for what the majority is saying about the systemic nature of the problem? Like, even if a mayor is trying to be fair, the system itself puts them in this tough spot.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's It's not necessarily about assuming bad faith on the part of any individual mayor. It's about recognizing that the structure of the system itself can create pressure, whether conscious or unconscious, to prioritize bringing in money over being completely impartial.
And I think that goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the appearance of bias.
Right.
Even if the mayor is making fair decisions, the fact that the system is set up this way, it doesn't look right.
Exactly. It undermines public confidence in the justice system because it just raises these questions about whether the process is truly fair and impartial.
Okay. So the Supreme Court decided, you know, back in 72, that this arrangement in Monroeville wasn't okay. But why does this case still matter today? I mean, why are we even talking about it now?
Well, for one thing, Ward really broadened our understanding of that principle that came from Toomey. You know, Toomey focused on direct personal financial interests for the judge. But Ward said, hey, even indirect financial interests, like the one in this case, those can also be a problem. And that's really important because it recognizes that due process isn't just about preventing blatant corruption.
Okay.
It's also about ensuring that there aren't these subtle pressures or influences that could affect how justice is administered.
Right. And I think that's something that's still very relevant today, you know, when we're thinking about things like the funding of our courts.
Yeah.
Or even the way that law enforcement is funded in some places.
Absolutely. You know, Ward has really become a touchstone for examining any situation where there's a potential conflict between financial interests and the impartial administration of justice. Like, think about the debates we see today about what some people call policing for profit.
Right, where police departments might be incentivized to issue more tickets or make more arrests because that brings in more revenue for them.
Exactly. And Ward gives us a framework for analyzing those kinds of situations and asking, okay, is this really fair? Does this create a potential for bias, even if it's unintentional?
And then there's the whole issue of how municipal courts are funded, you know, through fines and fees.
Right.
That's something that's been getting a lot of attention in recent years.
Yeah, it's a really important area to consider. And Ward provides this really crucial legal precedent for thinking critically about those systems and whether they might be creating, you know, even subtle pressures on judges to prioritize revenue generation over ensuring fairness.
So it sounds like Ward v. Monroeville, even though it's a case from, you know, decades ago, it's still very much alive in a lot of the conversations that we're having today about fairness and justice.
It really is. And it reminds us that we have to be constantly vigilant about protecting the integrity of our legal system and making sure that it's truly serving its purpose, which is to ensure justice for everyone.
Right. Because ultimately, the big takeaway from Ward is that, you know, when justice and financial incentives start to get mixed up, that's when we really have to worry.
Absolutely.
Because that's when the whole idea of fairness, the whole idea of due process starts to break down.
I completely agree.
Well, that was a really fascinating look at Ward v. Monroeville. And I think it definitely gives us all a lot to think about, especially in terms of how these kinds of issues are still playing out today.
Absolutely.
So thanks for taking this deep dive with us.
Thanks for having me.
And to everyone listening, we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.